Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 31 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy, and with me, as always, is Dave.
Hey, guys.
And we're here to talk comic books. Today, Dave and I will be talking about new comics that are going to be coming out on Wednesday, August 6th, 2014. And we'll be talking about some of the stuff that we read recently as well.
Right.
So let's jump right into new comics, Dave. What are you looking forward to most this week?
Well, Earth 2 is coming out this week, and I love Earth 2. And it's got a really cool variant cover by... they're doing the selfie variant covers.
Yes.
And most of them, I think, are kind of goofy and not cool.
I'll agree with you on that. I really love the Batman-Superman one. Superman is forcing Batman to smile.
Right. There's like maybe one or two that are kind of clever.
Right.
But this variant is done by Kevin Maguire, and he's just like the king of facial expressions.
That is true.
So, you know, it's nothing as far as like what they're doing. There's nothing like clever about it necessarily. It's just, you know, like, done really well as a selfie. It looks like a selfie and looks how these people would be. There's no like joke to it or anything like that Batman Superman cover. But when I'm looking at this, I was like, I wish they just had him do every single selfie, because that would be that would be perfect. I would want all those covers, you know?
That's a good point. It's funny, you know, he really is the master of facial expressions. If you ever get a sketch done from him at a comic book convention, he asks you what character you want, and then also what look you want on their face, like surprised, angry, startled.
Right.
I thought that was really clever of him to do that.
Yeah, that is, you know, that ties right into what people love about him. So,
it's
definitely good marketing on his part.
Yeah, he is going to be at New York Comic Con this October. Hopefully, I'll be able to get a sketch from him. Maybe I'll get Spider-Man looking surprised.
Yeah, maybe Spider-Man doing a selfie on a DC book.
Oh,
cover.
Boy. What I like about this, too, is that it looks almost as if Green Lantern is using his green flame to actually hold the camera.
Yeah. It does look that way.
And I like that Flash is actually photobombing him.
Yeah.
He's not just standing there. He, like, raced in.
I guess it is kind of clever in a way. Maybe that was a poor choice of words, but, you know.
Yeah, that's good. This might be my favorite of the selfie covers, which I'm surprised because I love that Batman Superman one.
Yeah, that gave me a good chuckle.
Yeah. Yeah. Besides this awesome cover, we have not only, the new Superman, Val, fighting the evil Superman, who is the Superman of Earth 2, but it looks like Huntress and Power Girl will actually be in this issue.
Right. Because they have finally made it back to Earth 2. And this week is going to be a fairly big Earth 2 week, because in New 52 Futures End number 14, they're getting to the Earth 2 prisoners who are on Cadmus Island. So if you take a look at that cover, you see... it's either Barda or Fury there, and we've got Lois Lane / Red Tornado and Mr. Terrific, who seems like an ultra douche in New 52 Futures End, which is kind of a bummer because he never was that way. But
Mr. Terrific was always like a really cool character before the New 52.
Yeah, I liked his. I mean, I like the series, or his characterization in his series, well enough as like, you know, as lining up with pre-Flashpoint Mr. Terrific. And in the Earth 2 series, when James Robinson picked them up, I mean, he didn't do too much with them, but it was, I like the juxtaposition of where he put him, basically, like, making him the anti-Terry Sloan, who was the original Mr. Terrific in the old Earth 2 comics, who is now like a Lex Luthor type bad guy in,
right.
Or Ozymandias. I would kind of put him more towards that, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, now, you read Grayson number one, and you weren't that big on it.
No.
Are you going to continue on to Grayson number two?
No, I'm not. Yeah, I bought
Grayson number one, and I haven't read it yet, so I won't be buying Grayson number two just yet either.
Well, you know, I'm going to say it's not bad, but it didn't, like, draw me in or anything. It just kind of seemed, you know, it wasn't anything amazing or shocking. And, you know, with the new number one that they relaunched a book for, you were kind of like, oh, man, this is going to be a crazy new direction for, you know, Dick Grayson. And it didn't give that impact, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's sad. Now, here is what might be my favorite cover of the week, is if you look at Tiny Titans Return to the Treehouse number three, it's Robin standing on top of a mountain yelling out Shazam while looking like he's getting Billy Batson's powers with the rest of the Marvel family surrounding him.
Yeah, Hoppy the Bunny.
Yeah. And Billy Batson is yelling again with more feeling. I love Art Balthazar and Franco. They're just so great.
Yeah, they're they have like just a great style, great, you know, everything that they do together has like just a lot of fun behind it, and you could tell they have fun making it. So just that comes through all their work.
Yeah. Now, jumping down to Marvel, I don't know if there's anything coming out this week that really jumps out at me. Oh wow! So it looks like Original Sin, the Angela story actually is three issues. I thought it was only two, but Original Sin 5.3 is coming out this week, and that I think brings to a close the whole how Angela is actually Loki and Thor's brother thing.
Oh, have you been reading that?
No, I bought the first issue on my iPad while we were down the Outer Banks and haven't read it yet.
Huh.
So I can't bring myself to buy the following issues until I actually read that one.
Right. It looks, I mean, it sounds interesting, but I don't.
Yeah, I like the idea. Like, Simone Bianchi is doing the art, and he's, you know, I feel like his art style is perfect for, like, Norse gods. Since Jason Aaron is writing both Thor and Original Sin, I figured this would definitely be, like, one of the better tie-ins. And I can't say if it is or isn't. I just haven't read it yet.
Yeah, Rocket Raccoon number two comes out.
I'm getting that, no doubt. And Stan Saki is doing a variant cover for it, which is kind of cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I won't be buying the $20 variant cover. I'll just be downloading the regular version on the Comixology app. And here's something interesting that's coming out. Well, not to gloss over Rocky Raccoon. Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy?
No, I didn't.
It's terrific.
I might do that. Sarah's having her bachelorette party in like 2 weekends. And
okay.
So, well, she's out, you know, doing stuff with the girls. I might go and see Guardians of the Galaxy with the guys.
Nice. Yeah, it was awesome. I highly recommend seeing it. And I love the first issue of this Rocket Raccoon comic. It's great to see Scotty Young actually doing comics again and not just covers. And this is, you know, he's writing and drawing this, which is like a special treat.
Mm. Right.
Now here's something weird that's coming out. Superior Spider-Man number 32. Superior Spider-Man came to an end a few months ago when Amazing Spider-Man came back in, I believe, June. And now what we have is Dan Slott writing. And, oh, this starts off that Spider-Verse crossover where we're going to get every, like, variation of Spider-Man that we've ever seen before in one series.
Except for Spider-Boy.
Oh, except for Spider-Boy, yeah. That's too bad that they couldn't make a deal with DC to get their rights for him. I wonder if maybe he'll be referenced or somehow shown.
Yeah, like a little Easter egg, you know.
Yeah, kind of the way that, like, you know, when Marvel couldn't do a DC crossover, they made the Squadron Supreme.
Right, right. Maybe there'll be a Squadron Supreme type Spider Boy.
Yeah, yeah. Super. Maybe it'll be called Super Spider Boy.
I've never read Squadron Supreme or any of those books.
It's actually really the miniseries, or I guess maxi series was the term for those 12 issue limited series back in the 80s.
Right.
It is great. I actually read it in trade in college, shortly after Mark Gruenwald passed away. In his last will and testament was that he wanted not to be buried, but to be cremated and then have his ashes put into the ink of a comic book. So when Marvel released the Squadron Supreme trade paperback after his death, Alex Ross did an awesome cover for it, and in the ink for the cover, they actually put Mark Gruenwald's ashes in there.
Whoa, that's pretty crazy. I didn't know that. Wow.
It is crazy. It's one of the books he's most known for, so it makes a lot of sense. I'd say, you know, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, which, like, wouldn't exist without him.
Right.
And because he did most of the writing and the research for that. Squadron Supreme and then his extensive run on Captain America, I feel, are what he's most known for. But and he didn't create the Squadron Supreme. That was a Roy Thomas creation from, like, the 1970s Avengers comics. But what he did with it was very, very, very similar in a way story-wise to Watchmen. You know, it doesn't get the critical acclaim that Watchmen gets, and, you know, deservedly so, but it's still a great series.
Right, right.
Even in the 90s, it was showing its age as like an 80s comic, so I haven't read it recently, but I would recommend reading it.
Yeah, I know J. Michael Straczynski, didn't he do like his own take on that?
Yes, when Marvel first launched their Max line, he came out with a book. It wasn't called Squadron Supreme. I think it was just called Squadron or Supreme. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was probably not Supreme, because isn't that an
Image right. character? That was an Image comic.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was called. I bought the first couple issues of it, and I did not enjoy it.
Well, really? Wasn't Gary Frank on art?
He was. He was. And that's, you know, I love Gary Frank's art, but yeah, J. Michael Straczynski as a writer, I used to love him. Now I kind of like, you know, he's got his good and his bad.
Yeah, well, I think that's with anybody. Jumping over to Image, there's a Imperial number one. It's written by Stephen T. Siegel.
Yes.
Everything I've ever read from Stephen Siegel, I've liked.
I feel like he's a very underrated writer. Like he always seems to fly under the radar, but like you said, everything I read from him, I enjoy.
Yeah, he wrote some Superman a while back, and prior to that, he did this Primal Force book off Zero Hour.
That was the book I picked up instead of Starman.
Yeah,
because I was a big Red Tornado fan.
Right, I picked up, I think, all of their like weird off center books that they launched from that line.
Like
so Fate. Well, I was a big Dr. Fate fan. So like I was a big JSA fan back then, so like I picked up Fate and I picked up
was Manhunter the other one?
That yeah. And Manhunter. And Manhunter was probably the worst. Fate I enjoyed, actually. I felt like it was a good series. It was like a good story, but like the art and the look was just trying too hard, you know?
Yeah.
I enjoyed the Fate character, and it was like one of my favorite comics when it came out, and I followed the character through like I think the two or three series he had before it returned to Dr. Fate. But the Primal Force, I think if I had to rate them all, I'd put it, you know, Starman, Primal Force, Fate, and Manhunter coming in a dead last.
Yeah, I would put them in that order, too. Definitely Starman and Primal Force. I enjoyed Primal Force a lot.
Yeah, some really interesting things that I thought he was, like, hitting on with the Layman and Dr. Mist and It was I found the series very interesting because it was like how, and the letter columns were really interesting in those books. And he always talked about how he was trying to, I remember him talking about how he was trying to create a team that had all different like primal aspects of like different nationalities and different like continents on Earth, in addition to like the different elements of like Red Tornado being wind, and there was like a claw guy who was like an animal, and you know, and they had a golem character who was the earth, and so like I found it all pretty interesting.
Yeah, I really love that golem character. And it's funny, I think I actually got into Young Justice, which is another DC series I loved from the late 90s, because of the Red Tornado connection too, because one of the characters was Red Tornado's adopted daughter.
Right. That was the same thing, because he was their mentor, and that's when I saw he was in there, I was like, oh. And he was, I think, underutilized in Primal Force a little bit, but he was like very mysterious there, you know.
He was like not an empty shell, but almost an empty shell.
Yeah, he was an empty shell, but like everything he did, like kind of seemed to have meaning. And
yeah, he was almost like Silent Bob in Clerks.
yes, except he didn't have a diatribe at the end.
That is true. That is true. I think the series just ended too quickly.
Yeah. But and they also he also introduced a really cool character, Willpower, who I found pretty interesting, who was like an illegitimate son of Johnny Thunder. And he had like lightning powers and stuff, and not like he was never like touched on ever again, but I always thought like he had like really interesting, like he could fit like in a really interesting place in the DC universe, you know, with the name Willpower and having magic and stuff like that, you know, maybe a bridge between the magical universe and like kind of like the Starheart or something and Green Lantern.
Yeah, did DC ever do anything with him after Primal Force came to an end?
No, he just kind of disappeared off the map.
Huh. I'm gonna actually look him up on Comic Vine right now. He's listed as being in only 11 issues.
Yeah, his real name, William Two Trees.
Not William Power, interesting. Yeah, William Two Trees. The illegitimate son of Johnny Thunder and an Apache woman, of course.
So
he kind of looks like a thunderbolt. So does Johnny Thunder shoot out like thunderbolt sperm? Is that how this works?
Maybe it wasn't Johnny Thunder who had the illegitimate kid, but maybe it was a thunderbolt.
Yeah, Johnny Thunder's like, oh no, that was me. I totally had sex with a girl. Like, yeah, right, Johnny Thunder.
The thunderbolt's like, mm-mm.
Why does it look like a thunderbolt then? It's funny. The only titles he's listed in is 10 issues of Primal Force and one appearance in the DC Comics Encyclopedia. Amazingly, he made it into the DC Comics Encyclopedia.
They are thorough over there.
Yeah.
DK Books or whoever.
Yeah, DK Books. Out. Yes, very good.
I'm surprised that they still put out those encyclopedias, because it's almost like, well, that's like Wikipedia took that away.
yeah. But I guess if people bought, you know, that they make, I'm guessing they make good gifts around Christmas time for kids who, you know, like comic books.
Yeah. I mean, if I got that when I was a kid, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to memorize everything.
Come on, Dave. If you got that like tomorrow, you'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to memorize everything.
Oh, this is true. This is true. That would be my one. And then I'd be like, I got to do some work on other things.
And then you'd be like, I got to get the next one. and you know what? There's actually jumping completely to a new book. There's a contender with that a selfie Earth 2 cover for my favorite cover of the week. And that's the new issue of Black Widow, number 9, Phil Noto, the regular artist doing the cover there, and it's Black Widow Natasha sitting in a chair that looks like the Punisher's skull, and I don't know what it is about Phil Noda, but I just love his art so much. He's easily one of my favorite comic book artists.
Yeah, he just has like he makes it look easy.
Yeah, I feel like if he didn't want to draw comics, he'd, you know, we could just be like a successful artist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure. Just by the way, he works. I bet you he does, you know, work for agencies and stuff. I have a feeling how he draws and all that stuff. It looks like he doesn't just strictly do comics.
And does like design works too.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of wish Deadpool had a selfie cover this month. That would be hilarious.
Yeah, well, they kind of did a Deadpool. No, I guess they didn't.
Only if it was this
plus
month.
Panel.
Because I feel like he's just great to like, you know, spoof things and stuff like that.
Yeah, that is true, because they are doing a Deadpool 3D motion cover next month to spoof DC's, you know, line-wide motion covers.
Right, right, yeah.
Although I don't know if it's actually going to be like a lenticular cover or if it's just going to be three Deadpools on the cover dancing, and that's why they call it 3D.
What did you read this week?
Well, you know what? I didn't read any of the new comics that came out last week, which I'm kind of kicking myself about because I really want to read last week's Justice League. But what I
totally forgot that the new Greg Rucka book came out last week. After talking about it so much, I've just been so into reading Manhattan Project. That's all I read.
Yeah, I did read. I picked up actually from the library of all places. The trade for Superior Spider-Man and Indestructible Hulk, All New X-Men. Their crossover that they did. It was three specials. It was kind of like their annuals crossing over.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
The Arms of the Octopus, and it's basically Dr. Octopus is back on the scene. But how can that be? Because, you know, Dr. Octopus at the time was in the body of Peter Parker. And this was not done and not written by any of the regular writers. It was actually written by Mike Costa. The art range, because there was a different artist on each issue, the strongest, I think, being Chris Anka, who did the art for All New X-Men Special #1. And that was also my favorite issue of the three, because before it set it up, before the villain appeared, it set it up, and it was basically the teenage All-New X-Men taking a trip into Manhattan, being kind of freaked out by, like, how much has changed since they were teenagers. Mm-hmm. And you even got, like, a cutesy Beast and Bobby Drake, like, meeting girls in Central Park. A few pages of that, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually a good story. It was definitely, I definitely don't regret taking it out from the library. I think if I had paid money for this, I would have regretted it. I don't think it was worth reading, not worth buying.
Gotcha.
And that actually brings me to a point that I've been meaning to bring up on the podcast for a while. And that's, if you're looking to save money on comics, I definitely recommend checking out your local library. The Brooklyn Public Library and the New York City Public Library here in New York City have awesome comic book selections. And what's great about them is that there are so many branches, so you could just go on like the Brooklyn Public Library website, and if there's like a comic that or a trade paperback you want to read that's in a different library than your own, you could reserve it. They'll bring it to your library, hold it for you, and then email you to let you know that it's there. And that, I used to work in a library in high school, and we did not have many graphic novels at all.
Yeah,
I feel like
libraries
now
used to just have the Dark Knight, Sandman and Watchmen and Understanding Comics. And that would be like the four books that every library would have. And
that's so true.
And if they ever had anything else, it would be a shock. But yeah, you know, if you go to conventions now, you see a lot of librarians there, and they have, you know, that they're really looking at comics as a way to bring people into libraries and stuff. So when you go into libraries now, you see a lot more stuff you can read.
Yeah, New York Comic Con actually has a panel, I believe, every year for librarians, and librarians like get either free passes or discounted passes to New York Comic Con. And it really is amazing. Like, I read most of The Walking Dead through my public library, and the same thing with Fabled. Yeah, it's super convenient. I don't use it for Marvel books that much anymore, because by the time the library gets the trade, it's usually up on what's it called, Marvel Digital Unlimited. But that's right. Yeah, that's where I get a lot of like my DC trades from.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah. Well, off topic, but did you see the new spoiler uniform from Batman Eternal?
No, I have to Google that right now.
It's pretty cool. It meshes like her spoiler outfit with her Batgirl outfit pretty nicely.
You're nice enough to send it over to me just now, because my Google search was not working. Oh, wow, that looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might help that whoever's doing the art, who is that, Phil Jimenez?
I think it's Jason Fabok.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
It's very Huntress-esque.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I always thought Spoiler and Huntress had the
same color scheme.
Same color scheme.
But this whole new, like, the armored plating that seems to be on the legs and the side looks very Huntress to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what is reminiscent of the Batgirl outfit. I enjoy that she's not covering her whole face. And it does two things here that I think is really nice. First, you have it gives her more expression, because you're seeing her eyes and her eyebrows, and it doesn't make that full like face mask that is loose but had expressions look weird, you know.
Right.
That just ends up looking cartoony. In addition, it gives a nod to her father, the Clue Master, and his mask.
Oh, I don't know what the Clue Master's mask looks like off the top of my head.
It just has like a bandana that he, like, you know, like a regular old bank robber.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah, I just looked him up. What is with those capsules that he wears on his chest?
I don't know. You know, it was the 90s. Everyone had capsules on belts.
I don't know. like he was, you know, a second cousin you're embarrassed of. You're like, yeah, I don't know about Clue Master. You know,
it's the same reason why Fate had all those little pouches on his belts, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that Fate costume, I remember thinking, I was like, wow, they made Dr. Fate look so cool. And now I looked back at it the same way I look back at like photos of myself in high school, and I'm just like, oh my god, the mid-90s. I remember in the mid-90s saying, fashion will, like, 80s and 70s fashion was stupid, but I think we got it right now. This is never going to change.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
Oh, okay.
That's like Oscar Wilde quote, fashion is the highest form of ugliness. Why else would it change every...
Right. That's a good quote.
And I like... they gave her Nightwing's weapons, which is also, I think, a nod to them wanting to make Stephanie Brown Nightwing in the Smallville universe and that not being allowed to happen.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. I always like talking about DC characters, because you go into a depth that I would not be able to do.
Yeah, I don't know how it's all in here.
Although, on that image, what's going on her hood, where I can see through her head into like the fire behind her?
Oh, there's a silhouette of a person on a bike. I think that's just her on.
I see. Okay, I didn't even notice the bike behind her.
Yeah, you could kind of do without it. It just, you know, it's all right.
Right. Though. Oh, that makes so much more sense now. I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, though. I don't like that perspective shift there.
Yeah, I don't know if it's needed, you know. it just looks like it's on top of it. Nothing clever happens with it. You know, like,
yeah.
It's not like that. One of my favorite covers recently, or I guess not too recently anymore, but it was the start of the Daredevil book where he's like doing like flips and it's a cityscape, you know, and it looks like this really Art Deco cityscape, but then you realize it's a bunch of machine guns.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I don't think I saw that cover.
So, yeah, but like, I feel like there should be something more that happens here, like, because it's like, ooh, look, she's inside this, but that's it.
Yeah, well, I love Stephanie Brown, so I've not been reading Batman Eternal. I have the first issue, which I got for free from Comixology on Batman Day. Haven't read it yet, but I am psyched for this. I know she's been appearing in Batman Eternal, but wow, this makes me super excited, because I loved her as Spoiler, I loved her as Robin, I loved her as Batgirl. I was one of the few people who bought that entire Batgirl series.
Yeah, I never read that series, but I mean, everyone said it was really good. I always stay away from Batman series, like until later on, and I can suss through it, because I always feel like they're all encompassing, you know, like all of a sudden, like, you know, that's tying in with this. This is tying in with that. But like, I feel like if you wait a little bit, you're like, the good stuff rises to the top and you can pick and choose nicer.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's kind of what happened in that Batgirl series. I picked it up because they did a crossover, or Damian guest starred in it, and it was awesome. And then I was like, I need to go back and read everything else. And it was great. And Dustin Nguyen was doing the art early on, and I love his work, so... You know, the art team of him, I think he and Per Perez switched back and forth on art, with Marcos Martin doing the covers. So it's like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
That is a great art team.
Yeah, and the writer of it, Brian Q. Miller, is the guy who's writing the Smallville comic right now.
Oh yeah, that's right. I think now that you say that, I think he was saying that like. I think he ended that Batgirl series with like a flash forward into the future, and you saw her as Nightwing. And
oh yeah,
and that's why she was.
Why she has the Nightwing sticks here? Do you think?
Yeah, I think, and that's why he wanted to make her Nightwing in the Smallville comic.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it was like, that's it. Yeah, there's even an image out there of this thing. I'll send it on over to you.
Yeah, please do that. Okay, yes, I do remember this. Yeah. Yeah, man, I missed that series. That was a victim of the New 52.
Yeah, I don't think it sold very well, so...
No, but it sold well enough. I think that like if the New 52 didn't happen, it would have went on for a while.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But what do I know? That's just wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah, maybe.
yeah, so you've been reading Manhattan Projects. How far into it are you?
I am in the fourth trade, and I love it. It's probably it's up there with Jonathan Hickman's work, and as his Fantastic Four is. Like, his Fantastic Four to me was like really, really good by the end. I loved it. And this combines like the characterization that he really got down, and the character moments in Fantastic Four with his like really cool indie stories that he had, like which were like early Jonathan Hickman just really reminds me of just like, look at this cool idea, I'll show you how it's played out, but like you're not emotionally attached to any of it, you know, and I right. feel like this is like the best of both, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. I started reading Manhattan Projects early on, and then I fell off it. But I think that's one of those books I'll definitely go back to one day and read through.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff going on. I feel like it to read it in trade is definitely better. So, yeah.
What is this? Now, this is also Stephanie Brown as Batgirl? As Nightwing?
So it was announced that she was, like, I think that's the artwork where she was going to be Nightwing in Smallville. And they were like, whoa, 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 guys, that's not right. We're not doing that.
That looks super cool. That Batman costume is weird looking.
And then I think they changed it to Barbara Gordon.
I see.
So I guess the reasoning was that the Smallville universe was only the iconic characters
interesting.
In there, which I think is kind of a little baloney.
Yeah, it sounds like a little baloney.
I mean, because Bart Allen as the Flash is not really iconic.
That's a very good point. I didn't consider that. Bart Allen is probably, I would say, the third most iconic Flash.
Yeah.
At best.
Maybe.
And no, I take that back. Sorry, Jay Garrick, fourth most iconic Flash.
Yeah.
You were like, I think I know which one he's forgetting.
I'm sorry, fifth most important Flash, John Fox.
John Fox, the flying squirrel?
No, John Fox was a future Flash. He appeared in a time and time again, or like a time story, and then he became the Flash of DC 1 million.
Okay, yes, the DC 1 million Flash. No, I get that Bart wasn't actually Flash, you know, for that long.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was joking with the John Fox thing.
I don't know if you were, Dave.
And there was a time when Jesse Quick wore the Flash outfit too, but I don't think she called herself the Flash.
Yeah, I don't know if Jesse Quick ever did, but if you said she did, I would actually just defer to you on that one.
I don't think she did. Like, I think Wally West like did some weird thing where he's like, Jesse, you're gonna be my replacement, and I'm dying. And that was right around the time of Flash 100.
Okay.
And Bart Allen was like, I'm supposed to take over as a Flash, and he's a kid, but he was just doing it to like get, you know, Bart Allen amped up and in shape and like, you know, going down the right path. And then Jesse was like, what the hell, man? And she was really ticked off. I think that's what all that was.
I think I'd be ticked off about that too.
Yeah, it's pretty jerk move on Wally West's part.
Yeah, and Wally's not usually that big a jerk.
No, he's a nice guy. So.
Wally West, what a dick. And that's where I'm going to end the podcast. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so you've been reading Manhattan Projects. I've been going through those Monkey Brain books and reading this trade I got from the library. And but there is a piece of news I wanted to talk about. And it actually comes from this issue of Justice League that neither of us read last week. Jeff Johns had tweeted, Justice League number 33 out today. Lex Luthor is run at joining the team continues. The Dark Side War approaches and fun chaos with the Doom Patrol. And he included an image, and it's pretty mysterious looking. Dave, I think you're gonna have to read this issue.
I saw the image, which was it was like the coming of like a dark side thing or something.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the Anti-Monitor or like I don't understand if this is Dark Side or the Anti-Monitor, why he has long Mr. Sinister hair. I'm like DC really is turning into Marvel of the 90s. Mr. Sinister's everywhere.
That's funny.
Yeah. Jeez. Apocalypse is coming. Wait, no, wrong company.
What did they do? The Apocalypse, was it Apocalypse Now? What was the Apocalypse storyline they did?
Age of Apocalypse?
Nah, that's it. Yeah. I get they'd get in pretty big trouble if they did Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, I'm sure like there's probably a single issue that is named, you know, titled Apocalypse Now that they can get by. But yeah, I don't think they'd be able to like come out with an X-Men movie called Apocalypse Now. X-Men 7, Apocalypse Now. Yeah, excuse me, guys. That's taken. Fine, X-Men 7, Star Wars.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And guys, just remember, Wally West ever offers you the mantle, don't be fooled.
Yeah, Wally West, kind of a jerk. And if your name is Stephanie Brown and somebody says that you could be Nightwing, not so fast.
Don't believe it.
Yeah, fool me twice, shame on you. Fool me a third time, shame on me.
Exactly.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Have a good week.